Podcasting 2.0 for August 15, 2025, episode 230, Bacon Polyfill. Hello, everybody. We are live and lit and ready to rock and roll. It is time for Podcasting 2.0. That's right. Everything going on in podcasting. Well, everybody's traveling and on vacation, traveling to podcast movement. Now we're hanging out here at home on a Friday. We are, in fact, the only boardroom that never locks a deprecation discussion. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who can catch any phishing emails from Gmail. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave Jones.
Big lungs.
Yeah.
You have massive pipes.
I still got them, man. I still got them.
Yeah. Do me a favor.
Yes.
On your keyboard, you're on Windows, right?
Yes.
On your keyboard, type Windows key.
Windows
key. Okay. You're going to have to, this is a key,
key sequence.
You're going to have to hold these down.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
Windows key plus control.
Wait, plus sign or just control?
Just control. Windows key, control.
Yeah. I'm not doing it yet.
Alt.
Yeah.
And okay. Then, alt.
Yeah.
Shift.
Jeez. Yeah.
You hold all those down and then you hit the letter L. Now, what do you think that's going to do?
I'm going to do it. I mean, the show be off the air if I do this?
No, this is not Alt F4. No, this is not a reboot.
Okay. So I have to hold them down all at the same time?
Yeah. Windows key, control, alt, shift, and then hit the L.
Okay. L. No, it basically just took me to LinkedIn on my browser.
Yeah, that LinkedIn, that is in every version of Windows.
Really?
Baked into the operating system is a hotkey that just opens the LinkedIn website.
That is fake and gay. That is not that okay.
That is the grossest use of an operating system I've ever seen.
Wow. Wow.
Why? I could sort of forgive them if it was like an M took you to Microsoft's website, but LinkedIn?
But well, don't they own LinkedIn? Didn't Microsoft buy LinkedIn? Do I have a...
Yeah, they do. But yeah. It's a piece of junk website. I mean, like, it's crap. I mean, why not all that and G to open GitHub? I mean, they own that too. GitHub would be 100 times more useful than LinkedIn.
To be honest, this is not the easiest keyboard combo I've ever had in my life.
You'll only ever open this if the cat walks across the keyboard. You're never going to open this on purpose. But it just makes me angry. I mean,
So have you tried other... First of all, how'd you hear about
this? It's egregious.
How'd you hear about this?
One of my coworkers told me.
Okay, I'm going to see what happens if I hit G, nothing. K, nothing. P, nothing. L, boom.
Okay, you want another one? Do the same thing and hit Y.
Oh, yeah, hold on. It just opened up PowerPoint. I don't know why I did that. Okay, I do another one. Hold on.
And hit Y. Uh-huh. Yammer. That's a product that they discontinued. They don't even make it anymore.
Yammer.com.
They don't even use Yammer anymore, and yet my operating system has a hotkey that takes me straight to it.
You know
what I'm going to do about it?
You're going to throw Windows out of your entire company.
I'm going to do nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
I'm going to get very angry.
So I've been having all kinds of issues with the No Agenda stream. Of course, we are lit and live, everybody. And we noticed that something was going on because, you know, part of the Podcasting 2.0 fabulous namespace, the podcast namespace, I should say, is the lit tag. And we have many of the modern podcast apps that support it. So you get a notification when we go live and then boom, you tap it. You're listening live in your podcast app. It's mind blowing. It's mind blowing to witness this.
Even apps without a back end. So that's you have right. No excuse.
That's right. And of course, by the same token, thanks to the PodPing functionality, when we publish the show within 90 seconds, you get a notification it's been published. So we've had this problem where our numbers were down for the past couple of weeks on No Agenda. And because we always track that, we do a troll count, how many trolls are in the troll room, which is a whole different chat room from the boardroom, obviously.
sometimes.
It's like a boardroom, but it's all trolls.
Trolls, yes. It's trolls. And so the numbers were down by about 200 on Thursdays and Sundays. And by the way, you know, we get up to like 22, 24. We've had almost 4,000 at one point. I think that was the day after the Trump assassination. We had 4,000 people like, what are they going to say? Well, I don't know. So anyway, so it's been down about 200. And then people start sending me bug reports. Now, your typical bug report from a typical user is as follows. The stream doesn't work. So that is that's usually how it starts.
And what does a bug report from a troll look like though?
There's different ones usually. You always talk about those modern podcasts that don't work. Okay,
that's a troll.
And so of course I try to debug this, and I first noticed there was a correlation between people using iPhones and AT&T. So, you know, because I'd say, hey, try, because they're like, you know, it doesn't work on Podverse and Fountain, Castomatic. I say, what network? The first thing I think is we've been blocked somewhere. You know, that's kind of the first thing. Like, this is a network block. And so I try to determine, is it AT&T? And this seems to be a high correlation with AT&T mobile server. So they'll try it on Wi-Fi. People say, oh, it works fine on Wi-Fi. But then the same people would come back later and say, well, it suddenly worked on, didn't work on Wi-Fi, and now it seems to work on AT&T. And so now I'm kind of digging around. Luckily, we have a lot of people. So I'm still focusing on iPhones. Like maybe Apple changed something. Wouldn't surprise me. So I'm trying to figure out, is that it? And then finally, it's actually Rocky Thomas who sends me a screenshot, Rocky Smart. And she sends me.
I saw this email. Yes.
She sends me a screenshot of Fountain, and it has an actual error message in Fountain, which has some clues.
And look at Fountain giving us the print debug. Yeah. This is awesome.
that was pretty good. Like, yes, this is helpful. And then we dig a little bit deeper, and it appears that some people are experiencing a cert issue, a certification error. I'm like, that's really strange because, you know, we definitely have certs running. I mean, I'm seeing it here.
These are not uncertified people. These are people experiencing a certification issue.
Well, some of them may have been uncertified as well. But yes, they're experiencing a certification issue. And then I hear from other people, no, it's happening on Android. And so we're digging in, and I'm working with Void Zero. We're digging and digging and digging. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I think it might be this. What do you think the error was? Why was it sporadic and really happening more? If someone couldn't get it on Wi-Fi, they typically couldn't get it on Wi-Fi. But on cell phones, sometimes it would work, and sometimes they'd get a cert issue. Just, you know, like, this is not a safe stream. So an SSL error, basically.
The first thing that pops into my head is that certs have a thing called an SAN number, SAN name, where you can put attach a secondary name to it, and so like naming of the certs have to mutually match the URL that the cert's being delivered from. And so I would think that my first guess would be that this is some sort of name mismatch between what the browser thinks the stream is and what the cert says it should be.
Well, already, I don't know because I explained this yesterday on No Agenda, so I'm just going to presume that Daniel J. Lewis and Eric PP are honest people and they didn't hear the explanation yesterday. But you're correct. The vhost was misconfigured on IPv6. So if you happen to spin up your phone and it got an IPv6 versus IPv4, then you got a certification error.
Right, because the certificate name, it's a head fake because the name in the certificate is pointing to it, has a host name attached to it, and there was no quad A record for an IPv4 address.
Exactly.
With that name.
Exactly. Yes. And so first of all, IPv6 is just a scourge in my life in general. It's just a scourge.
Can we just like go back now and just rip that all out? Because I mean, it's like
I can't remember my IP address.
I know. It's like 20 miles long.
Yeah. So, okay. So we got that fixed. So I'm telling this whole story. I'm proud of myself. I'm like, my troll numbers will be up. It's going to be great. And then we do the troll count. We have a little counting mechanism. Cotton Gin, I think, threw together. Somebody threw it together. I think so. And then you get the peak number of listeners. And it's low. I'm like, why is this low? Well, guess what? I was so jacked up about being able to talk about this story that I completely forgot to send out the bat signal. So I never pinged all of those modern podcast apps that we were going live. So
you almost forgot to send the bat signal. I know.
I've got to say, I need to vibe code a script for that. So it punches me in the face.
You're developing a bad habit. You got to nip it in the bud.
Yes, you're right.
It's like your dog's probably like mine. If you ever do something twice, suddenly that's the way everything's going to be from now on till the end of time. You know, like if you change the walk time like one day to some other time. The next day, it's like, okay, this is the new time forever for an.
My dog's not like that. My dog is just laying down all day long, and until I say it's a time. This dog will literally go 18 hours and just sit there and like, I'm fine, but I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever. Oh, we're gonna go out now. Okay, I'll go. That's fine.
How hot is it in Texas right now?
We have summer now. We've had the coolest summer as long as I can remember. Temperature right now in the hill country is 89, which is nice for us.
God, that's not bad at all.
That's nice. And we've had a couple of, we have not hit triple digits this year at all. So it's been beautiful, beautiful for us.
Good for you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're 89 here, but our heat index is 105.
It's heat index, meeting. That's like, feels like, come on.
Yeah, because it's the humidity is like off the chart.
How do they measure that? How do they know what it feels like? Do you know what 104 feels like?
I do know what 104 feels like.
If I put you in an oven, mm-hmm. which would be a tasty snack. If I put you in an oven at 93, mm-hmm. would you know the difference between 93 and 104?
I think I would know the difference I would not know the difference between like 93 and 97. I think I would know the difference between 93 and 104. That's a pretty big difference.
And why do we even feel bad over 98.6? I mean, isn't that just our temperature?
What's your humidity there in Fredericksburg?
It's always very low, or typically very, very low. Yeah, because we're up high.
It's 70% here. It's like you walk out and you have...
Right.
Within 30 seconds of walking out the door, you just have swamp butt. I mean, you're just dripping in sweat. Oh, it's the worst. Yes.
Well, I'm indoors more now because I'm a coder now, man. I'm just coding.
Man, you're on fire.
I'm whipping up stuff.
On fire. Yeah, you're texting me stuff like, hey, I got a new API.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I don't know how that
happened. He 33'd me. We're like, you're like, hey, man, I got a new API. I'm like, what?
Okay. I did add an API.
This is a whole new Adam. This is great. I love it.
I can't believe I actually made an API.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. I like the new Adam. Yeah. This is awesome.
Now I'm doing some. Now, right now, I'm doing some cool stuff. So I'm connecting Dropbox to an FTP server. This is cool.
And why are you doing this?
Because we have customers and I want them to be able to manage something on an FTP server, files, by dragging them in or dragging them out, but not have to deal with an FTP client. I want them to use something that they understand. Oh, Dropbox. I get it.
Okay. So you are... using Dropbox's API
to do this? No. It turns out there's actually a little widget that's called, what is it called now? I think it's called Mailstra. I think is what it's called.
I know what that is.
Yeah. It's a little service. I mean, you can, because I didn't want to have my entire, let me see. Hold on a second. Let me tell you what it's called. Yeah, Maestral, Maestral. It's a pip. So you install this thing, and then it gives you an authentication code, and then you can set up one directory in Dropbox, and then you can, have other things, as many directories underneath that, and it synchronizes it with a headless Linux box, which is kind of cool. You set it up within 3 seconds, it just works. By itself, a handy thing to have. Runs as a service. And
okay, so this is going to be something that the customer would have to install.
No, the customer just
Maestral.
No. The customer just gets a Dropbox invite. So they're like, oh, okay. And then you can use it on your browser, or most people have Dropbox.
Okay, so you're manipulating this. You're using this Maestral. I really don't like the name of this product.
It's okay. I'm not a hater. Free.
It's so hard to say.
Maestral.
Yeah. Using Maestral to just as a client, and then it will interact with the Dropbox API.
Correct. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Okay. Huh.
And so
you're inviting the customer into a Dropbox account.
A Dropbox share. Yeah. Just a single folder.
Okay.
You sound so negative.
No, I'm not. The first thing I think about, you surely know this about me.
You're thinking, where can it break?
Yes, exactly. I'm a software cynic. Down to the very blood in my veins.
Yeah, yeah.
I expect any company to rope you into an API and then rug pull you. It's like I just know.
Yeah,
I'm convinced of it.
Dropbox has been around for a long time, though. So I trust them. I kind of trust them. And this little widget is, Dropbox themselves also have a Linux client. But if you want to, if you want to start it up in just one directory, you basically have to start it and then start excluding folders really quickly. Well, my Dropbox, I have gigabytes of crap in there. It's the last thing I want is for that to start. Filling up. So this is just, one directory, click, boom, done. And then so whenever the customer drags something into their subfolder of that folder, then it automatically updates these files on an FTP server for play out, which is a whole nother story.
Right.
So
what you built the other day, and this is a broader, topic within podcasting, specifically Lit, is you built a proxy for metadata.
Yeah. So it turns out that any type of web client has a lot of trouble doing metadata from a stream. At least the players that are out there, unless you want to go. I mean, you can speak more to that, because when I said, hey, can we have metadata in these web players for Godcast, you're like, oh,
I
got to rip the whole player apart. All the code has to come out. Oh, yeah, we can do it, but
I did lay it on thick. So, I'll take it.
So I'm like, oh man, because that's actually a thing that a lot of these crap companies, that's app companies who are wrapper apps.
Yeah, right.
They call them crap companies, which a lot of radio stations and a lot of churches use them. And so they have all kinds of player stuff. But if you just have a something playing in a PWA that's in the app, or and a lot of them can't even do that. Some of them have just no metadata on their players. They just gave up on it. Like, but here's your giving page. Yeah, okay.
Here's the page that lists all the staff.
Here's your staff page. Here's your on-air schedule.
Can I just say, like, if you're a radio station, I just want to offer a word of advice. Nobody's going to your website to see your staff or, right. or like your mailing address. They just want to listen.
Or to your app. Yeah.
They just want to listen to your radio station.
It's kind of, that's just inherent radio stuff. And people will come. Some people are very, very, very in tune with what you and I are talking about and a lot not, but they'll come around eventually, I hope. So I'm like, oh man, I wish there was a way that we could do this. And I start tinkering around and like, well, this IC data, this ICY data, I'm sure I'm telling Cotton Gin nothing new here, is pretty standard across all radio streams. And so it's about a 16 kilobit stream that comes out of the stream. And when the metadata changes, you can pull it right out of there. I'm like, okay, that's kind of handy. So what can I do with this? And I decide to build a proxy. So when you hit the proxy, it immediately starts up the stream that you requested, keeps it running for 60 seconds, and writes the metadata to a JSON file. There you go, Daniel J. Lewis, I'm in your camp. Writes it to a JSON file, which then is returned through the API. And that, of course, you can put into anything. You can put it in an iframe for all I care. You can put it anywhere on the page. It doesn't just have to be in a player that happens to have this functionality. And every subsequent request for that, if there's, 100 people listening, just comes from a very lightweight API from the cached file. And then once a minute, it updates the metadata. I think I did 30 seconds. If there's no subsequent request within 5 seconds, then it stops the stream, deletes the cache. And I built that.
High five, virtual high five, buddy.
I'm kind of happy with that.
Because the first thing I said was, we're going to need some kind of caching. We don't want to spinning up like 20 streams for 20 listeners. Like, and you're like, I'm on it. And then like 30 minutes later, you're like, done.
Yeah. And I've kind of figured out how to do this with Grok. So I've settled on Grok. And the trick with Grok is first of all that stuff, all the AI stuff in Grok, it's all built on Python. So don't even try doing anything else. Just use Python. It understands Python. It's built on Python. It really knows a lot about Python. And of course, it's reasonably good at syntax. So it's rare that it writes a script where the syntax is incorrect, but it happens. Right. It happens where, curly brace, not close, use something that doesn't exist. Okay.
It's rare that it gets syntax wrong. It's very common that it just makes up function calls in libraries and APIs that don't exist.
You have to be extremely explicit. And the best way to do it is just think modularly. So you build something, it'll usually come up with, because I write everything out. Here's what I want it to do. Then I put that into the prompt. It'll come up with, it makes decisions. It comes up with something. Usually it's pretty close, but I take a small bit of it. This is the core functionality. And then you build that out. You might add one or two things on and then immediately start a new conversation and say, evaluate this script, understand what it does. Here's what I want to add to it. When you do that,
you're wiping its memory. And
totally. If you let it keep memory, that's where it all goes wrong. And then, as I've said before, you wind up with a suggestion to recompile your kernel because it's all your fault.
Which is the best thing ever. I love that that's what happens. That's so great.
But if you don't understand what you're doing, you'll never get there. That's just, if you don't, I have arguably 25 years of, more than that since the 90s. So what is that? 92, like 30 plus years of experience looking at code, understanding how things fit together and what things are possible. And I, going all the way back to my Radio Shack 101 projects breadboard, I understand how you can link things together, right? But I can link it. And that's almost like I've been, always been kind of good at command line pipe. You know, it's like, oh, I can pipe this out into that, into that, into that, and then I can get something that works. If you have those concepts down, you can actually make something functional. Right. And you still have to, you know, ask for verbose logging and, you know, because so with the FTP part of this, it wasn't getting the FTP right. And I'm like, what are you trying to do? Let me take a look. And I see that it's using FTP commands that don't exist in the FTP server that I'm using. It's like, oh, okay. So it's just assuming that this FTP server is of this build and has this functionality, but it doesn't. So you do have to really sleuth. It's not going to find that stuff out for you. It's going to say, let's try something different. Like, no, yeah. No, yeah. No. So
it's important to realize why this all is necessary. And because why can you not just get the metadata? And when we say metadata, what we're talking about is the name of, at the most fundamental level, we're talking about the name of the content that is currently playing, be that a song or a podcast or something.
Which is typically encoded in the file that's being played. Not always, but typically.
Yeah. So what you want, if you're listening to a live stream, is whenever the live stream switches from like one episode or one track to another, you want it to switch. You want it to tell you what the title of that new thing is. And, you know, other stuff if it's got it, like artist and that kind of thing. So the question is, how do you do that? And there's various different ways, and different live streaming servers do it in different ways. Some just have a metadata file. It's an XML file that's just published to the side, and it's updating that file every time.
Yeah.
It updates, which is actually wonderful, because then you can just make calls to it. You don't have to worry about it. But what most all streams do is what you're talking about, is they use this ICY metadata, and that metadata delivery is encoded in the MP3 stream itself.
Right.
And so every frame, I think it's like, you can set the interval, but every so many frames, it will deliver the string of what's currently playing.
Right.
And then, so the problem with this is you can only handle this two ways. Build your own MP3 decoder. That only gets you part of the way there, because the HTML native audio decoder does not do this for you. But then even if you do that, you're still going to run into the biggest hurdle, which is cores.
Yes.
C-O-R-S.
Right, which is why I had to do it, because you really have to just grab the stream itself. You can. Mm-hmm. You're better explaining that, I guess.
Well, Cotton Gin said, I watch for the ICY metadata, and when I see it, I fetch the JSON file on the Icecast server and parse that. There, a lot of servers don't publish that file.
Right.
Like that's the problem. So, like, when you have to, in order to get the stream to give you the ICY metadata encoded, you have to send a header to it called ICY metadata with a value of 1. You have to send that HTTP header. Otherwise, it won't give you back the metadata. So you have to specifically request it. And the problem is, even if the streaming server supports cores, cross-origin resource sharing, most of the time, they do not put that header in the allowed cores
exactly,
list.
Exactly.
So even if you can stream it, which browsers can do audio natively and violate cores, that's a built-in, like, acceptable violation of cores. As soon as you try to fetch the stream with that header, boom, you're blocked.
Right.
So you have to use a server.
So I'm using the Python libraries URL lib.parse and set the user agent as winamp/5.666. I don't know why that is, but so that combo, using that with that user agent, the streams always go, oh, hey, okay, here you go. And so then I just strip out looking for the headers, ICY-metadata.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. And it just, the script is remarkably small. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's, if it's 50 lines, it's a lot.
I don't understand. You know, I guess I just don't understand why you would publish an Icecast stream and not allow the metadata to be delivered through, you know, not make a CORS exception. It would be one thing if you have a one-off, okay? It's like somebody's just winging it in their basement.
And basically.
and they fire up, you know, they're winging it in their basement and they fire up an Icecast server to stream their audio collection or whatever. Okay, that's fine. But if you're like a big streaming platform that serves radio clients and this kind of thing, why do you not know this? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, I would say because in general, radio stations have their version of digital is a checkbox item. We've got a live now, listen now button on the website. We're good to go.
Thinking
out of the box, very much like RSS was just, here's what it does. That's all it can ever do. You know, it's just not creative. And so now we're getting creative when we run into all these different little nuances and issues. Anyway, I can't wait for you to put that into our player. When's that happening?
Maybe tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow.
I love you, Dave Jones.
That's actually not. So the way that that's actually not that hard, because the way you have it now with the proxy, I just have to do a fetch to the proxy in the a background fetch to the proxy every 15 seconds or so.
Yeah, do it every 5, man. It's fine. But boom, 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 boom. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You're very confident. You're very confident in your.
Oh yeah.
What is this running on, by the way?
This is running on an eight gig Linode.
Is this the same box as the channel streams?
Yeah. It's all good, man.
Don't do that. No.
Yes.
No. You have to have separation of concerns. Don't run multiple. First rule of sysadmin, man. Don't run multiple services on the same box. Do not. Don't do it.
Okay.
You have to spin up a $5 Linode and
do it there. Run. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you must do this, Adam, because what's going to happen is something in the proxy script is going to go nuts. It's going to break in a way you don't expect, and it's going to take all the other stuff down with it. See?
Okay.
Because that's what happened with Snap when you installed the...
You're right. Snap. Well, there were other reasons that things were going awry, including a zombie player, but that's a different story.
Be the only time in history that the term "oh snap" was actually accurate.
Okay, so I will set it up on the Linode, which means now I gotta like install Nginx and do all that stuff. That's the stuff that is most daunting. It's like, oh, I gotta set up the reverse proxy and the certificate, and that's the stuff that is just annoying. Everything else is pretty easy.
Well, see, once we move stuff over to the main account, the main Linode account, we can just stick all that stuff behind Cloudflare, and then you don't even have to need, they'll do certificates for you. You don't even have to do that anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how about this? Why don't you set up a Linode box for me?
I'll do it. Yeah. Yep.
Set up the Nginx, because I do need a web server. And I'll move everything over there.
I'll give you a handoff. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yes. Thank you. Because that, honestly, that's the stuff that took me a day to finally get my, you know, I was like, well, just use Sidecar, whatever that thing is called. What is that thing called?
I don't know what you're talking about. What is Sidecar?
There was a suggestion from the, from the Caddy. That's it. Thank you. Caddy.
Caddy?
Just use the Caddy. It's service. Easy. Well, no. The Caddy was like, well, are you using this kind of certificate? Are you using this? Are you using a modern thing? So I just went reverse proxy Nginx, good to go. Boom.
Yeah. Docker, you know, Docker's the way to go for a lot of this stuff. But I mean, it's like, you don't, when it's a small single purpose thing like this, you don't really, I mean, taking the time to build a Docker container and all that stuff, I mean, it's almost not even worth it.
No, you know, be careful what you say. You're going to get the Docker, the Docker maxis on you. Oh, Docker's everything is the best. It's the best.
I use Docker a lot in these days. You know, in the last few years, I've really, my use of Docker has really gone up, but I still, there's just times I don't, it's just not worth it because it's only worth it to me to go to Docker, a full Docker build out if you're going to invest the time to also go like CD, you know, a full pipeline where you push to your GitHub repo and a GitHub action kicks in and builds the Docker container and deploys it. Like that constant, if you're going to a constant deployment scenario, to me, it makes sense because otherwise you have to go through and run the commands and rebuild the Docker container and push it up to get to Docker Hub and all this stuff. And it's like, well, it's so much easier to run it in like a, you know, run it in like a screen, a disconnected screen or something. I mean, like it's not.
Oh, what do we call it? I forgot what that's called.
Yeah. Tmux.
Tmux. Yeah. I was using Tmux for a lot until I figured out it's probably easier to do a system service. I'm Mr. System CTL now.
Oh, you're all about system D.
Oh, I love that. Oh, well, you don't like that? That's no good.
No, no, it's good. No, it's the modern, you know, it's the modern way, I guess.
I love it. It's like, oh, set it up and then you can get a status. You can restart it. I mean, oh, that's fantastic.
Forever in a day. I will never be able to stop typing /etc/init.d/the-name-of-the-service/Stark. Like I can't make myself do the system control
sudo system control restart service.
Yeah. I cannot get it in my head. And because they kept backwards compatibility, and the old
matter.
Way still works, I just keep doing it.
Do the old way.
Yeah. It's like I still type to open the nano editor.
Oh,
I still type Pico.
Interesting. Oh, I'm VI. I'm a VI guy. I've always been a VI guy.
I can't do VI.
You only need a couple commands. $ to get to the end, A to append. Yeah, you don't. I for insert. Escape key is your friend, unless you're on a MacBook.
My muscle memory for things like Control/// to jump to a certain line number and Control+W for search is so strong I can't.
But I never got into Vim. It was like it may be the same thing. I don't know.
I thought they were the same.
I type VI and it just works. I don't want Vim. Vim is a Dutch cleaning product.
Okay, that's funny.
It's like, Vim is like Ajax, you know, abrasive cleaning product. But yeah, if you set up the Linode, it's literally one Python script, so I'll be able to, you know, install all the pips. I'll do Gladys and the pips, and then I'll set it up, and it should work. That's awesome, man. I'm so excited.
Cool.
I'm very excited about this.
I'll do it, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool. Well, there we go. That's it, everybody. Good show. Thanks for coming. That was fantastic. I do have a gripe. I got a gripe.
Okay. I hope it's not about me.
No, it's not about you. It's about Daniel J. Lewis.
Cool. I'm glad he's here.
Yes. I'm almost not interested in your secret podcast service anymore. You've been teasing it for a week now. Look at this. Can you find the Easter egg I dropped? Whoa, what could this be? Why does mine have more stuff than the other people? Show me the money. Show me what you got, man. It's too much teasing.
Just, yeah, put up or shut up.
Yeah, I almost don't want to know anymore. Oh, okay. You know, it can only disappoint at this. I mean, this thing is supposed to wash my car while I'm doing a podcast. I don't know what it does.
What is it, though? Do we even know what
it is? No, we don't know what it is. No. We don't know what it is.
Yeah. You got to know when to stop selling and close the deal.
Yeah, and he's like, "Look at this podcast episode. I left my calling card."
Yeah, Sir Spencer, I'm sorry for. I don't know why Spencer's feed just deleted itself. I don't know why.
Oh, this is not good.
I restored it, but yeah, I don't know. Did you ever figure out? Let's see. Did we ever figure out if it had like a block tag in it or something?
This is not good.
Ungovernable Misfits still works. Mm. That bug, I've been keeping an eye on that thing.
So I had a question though about the index party time crawling updating stuff.
Okay.
So I have a yet another vibe coded little Rube Goldberg machine here. And it would add an episode to a feed on my server, then would upload the episode, and then it would upload the feed. And once I was pretty sure that I had all the right elements, and by the way, another fun thing, just from stupidity of so-called AI, where I said, look, just add a new element. Here's what the elements look like in the feed. A new item. Here's what the item looks like. Just add this. Change the pub date. Change the obviously change the enclosure URL, change the title, all of this stuff, which is kind of cool. I got that to pull it out of with FFmpeg, pull out the title from the metadata. It's pretty cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it would sit there and it just wouldn't get parsed by the podcast index. It was no problem for me to initiate a scan manually, but I was kind of interested just in how, I just have it with the pod ping, but I was interested in when the index would see it. It's a daily episode, a daily show. And I mean, it would go beyond 24 hours, even with priority set at 5, and it wouldn't hit it. Is there some, how does the index know, or does it not know, for those sad people without pod ping, how does it get a daily sweep?
I misunderstood what you were saying when we were texting. Are you saying that it wasn't getting pulled at all?
No, before I added Podping, I would upload it. It would upload at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I had priority for scan at 5, and then it would be like 10 a.m. I go look, and it's like it, and I'd see in the podcast index, in the api.podcastindex.org, I see that it had not been scanned since 8 a.m. the previous day. So it had gone full 24 hours without scanning it.
Okay. I was misunderstanding what you were saying in your text. I thought you were saying that it was scanning, but not pulling in the new episodes. I don't know. I mean,
I made sure that the GUIDs were different on the, well, I wouldn't even pull it in if the GUID was the same. But if I hit a manual scan, it would work fine. And then I made sure that the modified date was changed and everything.
We look at a few different things to determine whether or not to scan the feed. And we try not to pull it if it doesn't need to be. And so one of the things, the two is last modified date in the HTTP header. And the E tag.
Ooh, E tag.
And so what's the E tag? E tag is a HTTP response header that gets sent along. It's usually just a hash. It can be any value, but it's usually just a hash, some sort of a hash of some of the content or something like that. Just to give you some indication of whether the content has changed since the last time that you pulled it.
That should be automatic on any server, though, right?
No, not necessarily. Mm. Where are these files living?
mp3.nashownotes.com. So it's on the kind of the main No Agenda hosting service.
Yeah, right. is there any caching or anything that's happening there?
Though minimal, because, you know, before Podping, it would take about 20 minutes before an RSS feed updated from there, if you recall. But it would get it within 20 minutes to 25 minutes. So that was before Void Zero changed whatever caching was happening. Mm-hmm. So I don't think so.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll have to dig into it and see why. But that's my only thought is just if there's some the reason we use both. Let me just look and see if it's what's the name of the.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to paste this into the boardroom so people much smarter than me can also take a look at it. So here it is. It does not have an XSLT attached to it. Just letting you know.
Oh, you're not even going to know what to do.
that's the feed. Okay. That's the feed. And so I diligently changed the pub date in the channel.
It's got an e-tag, so that's good. It's also publishing last modified.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know. I'll have to look.
And it's fine because, you know, Podping, man, that's so beautiful. Especially, what is that? The index has an endpoint for it.
Yeah. You can just use the hub.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Well, this podcast is in Godcaster too, right?
Yes. So it should be polling from there is what I thought.
Oh, yeah, it should be force polling that automatically from that side.
Well, something else maybe borked.
I'll have to look at it, man. Yeah. I'll find out.
Well, I'm only bringing it up because, again, for me, it's fine because I just put the Podping into my script. So, you know, it's like, boom, updates, beautiful. But there may be other edge cases like me that are like, how come it's not updating? Then we get an email, my podcast is not updating.
Spencer says something I've always wondered is pub date is the first time it was published and last build date is the latest update, right? So nope. Pub date if you're talking about pub date in the channel.
Yeah.
Pub date in the channel is the last time content was published to that feed. So that should typically pub date matches the pub date in the channel matches the pub date in the latest item that was published. Last build date is just a timestamp of when the feed was built. So right. you could rebuild the feed and there's no new content. And so that last build date just would be the last time. And so this is why it's very risky to base anything on the last build date tag in the channel.
Yeah.
A lot of times, like Anchor, I don't know if they still do this, but Anchor used to do this forever, is they had the last build date value in the channel. It would change every time you refresh the feed if you're in a browser, because that it was literally building it on the fly. So to it was literally building it every time you hit refresh.
Hmm.
And so it would just give you a different timestamp every time you hit F5 on your keyboard. So that's, you know, it typically doesn't hurt anything because, like, modern parsers, RSS parsers have to be really intelligent about detecting a feed change that it's usually not, you can't just rely on one thing or another. You have to look at a lot of different things in the feed to make a decision about whether or not to pull in new content. So, I mean, if you get the pub date or the last build date wrong, most of the time it's not going to be a problem. But, you know, because as long as you have a new item, GUID, for all your stuff and you have a pub date, and you have a pub date that is not future dated, as long as it's now or in the past, as long as you have those two things, it's usually the channel level dates are usually not a problem. Mm. But that's what they're supposed to be, according to the spec.
Well, see, this is good to know.
But, you know, did you see the XSLT discussion?
Yeah, explain it, because, yes, I saw it because you and Spurlock were posting about it.
Yes, we talked a little bit about this last week, you know, and the XSLT is XML, you know, templating and style language. And so the way this whole thing started was one of the, in the HTML working group, which sort of inherited the HTML spec from the W3C. I don't know whether you'd call it an inheritance or more of a hostile takeover. I think it may be more of the latter than the former, based on, you know, my remembering of history, but, what the HTML working group really is a bunch of browser companies, a bunch of companies that make browsers that collaborate, and other interested parties that collaborate on where to take the HTML spec and other web oriented specs. I don't have a list in front of me, but there's a few. And so this group is really kind of driven by the same group, the same names that everybody is familiar with and that you would expect: Google, Apple, Microsoft, Mozilla, you know, the Opera, the just any browser vendors. And, you know, the bigger the company, the more, you know, voice they seem appear to get. And that's, you know, probably hard to avoid that happening. But so somebody from Google popped into the group the other day and started a discussion a couple of weeks ago, about a week and a half ago, saying, should we deprecate XSLT? And like we talked about last week, XSLT is the templating and styling language that you can use to style an XML document in the browser so that it looks different or operates different. It's not just styling, it's also a templating language. So it does more than just style. You can actually modify the resulting content on the fly. And, you know, what the main argument was that XSLT, the browsers have brought in XSLT libraries, literally called libxlt. Most of them have defaulted to using this old C-based libxlt library called libxlt, and it's proven to have bugs. And the core problem of these security vulnerabilities that it has is because it is C code run, which is not memory safe, running in a non-JavaScript context. So the security context is not as tight as the JavaScript runtime would be. So it's basically like they've just bolted on this XML styling library to the browsers. And now that library has proven to have some security problems, which is, you know, hey, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. This problem's got to be solved. And when they have problems, the browser gets blamed for it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have, you know, it's a legitimate concern. The issue is that, you know, is that, well, their solution was
get rid of it.
Yeah. The proposed solution was deprecate libxlt. So basically just remove XSLT support altogether from the browser code. And then if you need XSLT, what you would need to do is publish an HTML page with a XSLT JavaScript polyfill that would then load the XML content and run it through the JavaScript. So that would bring this XSLT pipeline into the security context of the JRE. And then that solves the security problems. But now you have to publish everything as HTML first.
Oh, well, that's not, that's beyond the scope of the idea.
Yeah. So like you would no longer be able to just like go to an XML doc, like a URL that points directly to an XML document and the browser just style it for you. You would have to go somehow bounce that to HTML, then have the HTML page loaded in JavaScript and then run and then produce the content. And so this was the, yeah, this was the discussion for the last week and a half. And lots of people on there saying, you know, the only people on there saying that they're not the only, but most of the people on there saying, yeah, let's deprecate it are the other browser vendors.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's about to get worse. You hear the latest about Chrome?
No, what is it?
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that AI startup Perplexity is making a surprise $34.5 billion offer to buy Google's Chrome browser, even though Perplexity itself is valued at just $18 billion. Now, this unsolicited bid comes as a federal judge is weighing right now whether to force Google to sell Chrome to loosen its grip on web search after that ruling last year that the company illegally monopolized the market. Now, Perplexity says that major investors are backing the deal. That's according to the Wall Street Journal report, and it would keep Google as Chrome's default search engine while running the browser independently. Now, Google, which controls more than 60% of that global browser market, hasn't signaled any interest in selling. Analysts see a fourth sale as unlikely, but the offer signals that there's at least one willing buyer if the court orders it. We're out to both Perplexity and Google, but didn't immediately hear back.
Imagine that. Think XSLT is a problem. Wait until Perplexity AI is in your browser.
Seriously.
That's the last thing. I mean, I know why they want it. They're like, give us all your data. We want to suck it up.
Oh yeah. They would just pipeline all that stuff straight into the, you know, the AI brain or whatever, you know,
funnel.
You know, the people coming back, including me, saying, you know, we should not be deprecating this because it's still, you know, it's still in, it's got a lot of use cases. Mm. There's some cursory things being thrown, you know, some cursory responses being made to it, but it got to a point where, let's see if I can find it. Yeah, so the original poster from Google said, I'm trying to find his post. Basically, he's trying to boil it all down, and it felt like he was trying to wrap this thread up in a way. Here it is. The reason for this issue in this discussion is because XSLT that is shipped in browsers today is A, very old, B, not well maintained across browsers, C, barely used by websites, and D, a serious security risk to all users. So while we, the Chrome team, do understand the post suggesting a renewal and improvement instead of a removal, what he means is many posts saying, hey, why don't you just upgrade to a better version of XSLT?
Right.
We are strongly convinced that this would not be the right way to spend our limited resources. Now, the beginning of this post was, the post is literally titled, should we remove XSLT from the web platform? And now what he's saying is, we, the Chrome team, are strongly convinced that it should be removed.
Yeah.
So this was never just a neutral discussion. This was always going to end with, we're going to remove XSLT. So it's clear now that this was just sort of like a waste of everybody's, you know, thought power. Doing so would reduce our ability. Let's see. So, he's saying that spending the time to upgrade the XSLT library would reduce our ability to work on other platform features where there is measurable developer interest and impact. in which drive the web forward. One such example is Interop 2025. Most of the features in Interop 2025 have widespread developer interest, and many of them already have much higher usage than XSLT, despite some being relatively new. This technology, XSLT, is simply one that did not stand the test of time for client-side usage in web browsers. That does not take away from the technology itself. And so, this comment pissed everybody off.
I'll say.
Yeah, because it was basically saying, hey, I appreciate everybody's thoughtful responses, but we've already decided not to do this. We've already decided basically not to listen to you. We're going to do what we want to do, regardless of the strength of your conviction or the quality of your argument. And so the first response back was, quote, limited resources. You're literally a $2.5 trillion company.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But they're all on their stupid AI project.
Well, and then how many years did they spend building that stupid Google advertising sandbox stuff in there that then they immediately stopped?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, the Google privacy sandbox.
Oh, I don't remember any of
that. Was built into Chrome, and it was supposed to replace third-party cookies.
Sure. Yeah.
And they went through, first it was Flock.
About Flock.
That was going to replace third-party cookies.
Yeah.
And then everybody balked at that, and then they went back and did the Google privacy sandbox, and then everybody balked at that. But hold on a second.
Can't they just put a lot of that incredibly useful code-generating AI on the project? They don't need people. The Gemini will do it for them.
Yeah, point Gemini at libxslt and just say, hey, upgrade. Gemini, fix all the bugs.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta wonder if that's actually possible. They all say it is possible. Everyone say, well, 30% of our code is built by AI.
Yeah, get Gemini to run a fuzzer against libxslt and find all the security vulnerabilities.
Fuzzer. Yeah. I think we're being lied to, Dave. I think they're being lied to.
I sense dishonesty.
Yes, I do have that feeling.
You predictably get lot. You know, the comments started flooding in about, hey, you know, okay, all right, guys, you know, you're not being truthful here, or I don't want to say truthful. That implies some moral stuff. I don't mean. It's like, you've already decided not to do it, and you're just kind of wasting everybody's time. And, you know, my response was, you know, if all roads, and because this is what I had suggested earlier in this thread, I was like, well, if the solution is a JavaScript polyfill, and the polyfill correctly renders all of this XML styling, then why not just ship the polyfill right in the browser and trigger it automatically? Get rid of libxslt, but stick the polyfill in the browser so that it triggers automatically when the content type on a delivered document is XML. And that solves all the security problems because it brings everything into the JavaScript engine. But it would also put it into a separate module of the code base, so that people who do know XSLT and have the desire to upgrade that could submit PRs to the Chrome team, to the Chromium team. Well,
as we discussed last episode, last board meeting, they should be all for this for the very reasons of their web scraping AI ingesting pipeline. They want structured data. They if anything, they should want HTML to go away and for everything to be XML rendered with style sheets, because that'll make their hungry AI machine that much happier.
Yes,
I would think makes a lot of sense.
And XML is a beautiful markup structured language because it has schema, which JSON does not have.
Yeah,
so JSON. You don't have to. Yeah,
JSON. I spit on you, JSON. You have no schema. You have no schema.
And so I'm like, well, why not just bake this polyfill into the browser and just trigger it? And now people who are good at JavaScript and have an interest in XSLT can go and submit pull requests directly to the Chromium project, and they can maintain this for you.
Yeah.
And the response to this was, the response to that suggestion was, because, and this is a quote, because there will be bugs, feature requests, and additional maintenance.
Actual work involved. Oh, no.
Yes. And additional crazy maintenance that will then be needed on the polyfill going forward. This just shifts the problem to another area. Well, okay. Everything has bugs.
Yeah.
It's code. It's got bugs. It's but that code. Again was not the point of this thread. The point of this discussion was, should we remove XSLT because it's a security vulnerability? And now I've said, here's how you get rid of security vulnerability and maintain the backwards compatibility. But now they shifted the argument to where now it's not about security anymore. Now it's about the overhead of having to fix bugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now it's very clear that they just want this thing gone. They do not care, and they want to eliminate it, and they're not going to listen to any feedback. And so it's like, okay, so then everybody just goes nuts and starts posting a bunch of just basically ad hominem attacks against Google, which some are justified. And then they just lock, and so then somebody from Apple steps in and just locks the thread and hides all the comments, the nasty comments. And now it's just gone. Now you just, nobody can give feedback anymore.
Rage quit. We're done. We're out. We're, yeah, Google. We're history.
Yeah. Google alley ooped it. And then, yeah, and then the Apple guy slam dunked it. And now it's just going to, my takeaway from that is, if you're a podcast hosting company and you rely on, style sheets for XML to make your feeds look pretty, you need to start working on your backup plan.
Yay.
Yeah. So, and this is all so silly because, like, web browsers already, the unjustified sort of assumption here, or what's being, the idea that is being transmitted with this way of speaking, is that everything should be all web content should be somewhere on the HTML, JavaScript, JSON axis.
Right. Which again makes no sense from their overall company directive, but okay.
Correct. And that's not the web. The web has always been content agnostic. Yes, HTML is a first-class citizen, for sure, because of the linking. But that's not the definition of the web. The definition of the web is not HTML. The web is just a universal way to link to documents.
Mm-hmm.
And those documents can be of any type. That's why there's such a thing as the content type header in the HTTP response. The web is defined, you can define the web as a universally addressable document location system. That's what it is, delivered over HTTP. And so browsers already make lots of concessions for various document types. If you load a direct link to a PDF in any of the browsers, it will show you.
It opens in a PDF viewer, yeah.
Yes, it doesn't show you a binary blob of gobbledygook on the screen.
Blob of data.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
Yeah, me too. I remember them so much that I know what the little header looks like for the binary blob when it's like the little, you know, binary header of what a PDF looks like. It's like percent PDF or something like that.
Yes. When I was a kid, we had percent blobs.
But like, okay, see, this is different than deprecating something like, so if you're a browser and you're going to deprecate something like FTP, which they did a few years ago, that makes sense. That's a different protocol. That's not HTTP.
Has that been deprecated? Is that deprecated?
Yes. Yes. And you can't go to an FTP site in the browser anymore. But the web is documents delivered over HTTP. FTP was never part of the web. It was just a convenience feature that was placed on. I fully get that. But XML is a document, and if you address it with a URL and deliver it over HTTP, the browser should handle that properly. And just like it does with audio, if you put in a direct link to an MP3 file in your browser and deliver that over HTTP, it doesn't just show you the binary of the MP3. It gives you a little player with a play button on it. I just think it's a breaking of the contract of the web when browsers start making decisions about what content they are going to treat as not worth displaying correctly.
Well, the problem ultimately is that users no longer understand what a browser is. They say, I've got my Google or I've got my DuckDuckGo. That's all they know. They don't understand that they're in a web browser. They don't. They're on their phone.
Yeah.
And I have an app for that, which is fine. In fact, it's actually better, except for the default browser that opens, but I think there's a lot of room still for people to create apps that have at its core search functionality and then a browser. And I think there's plenty. That's probably what Perplexity is seeing too, because users just don't. Dave, there are people we've been keeping track on No Agenda. People, first, we know that people can't read clock anymore, an analog clock. Don't know how to.
Oh yeah, with hands. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. There we have an example of a DoorDash worker standing at a deli counter saying, "I need 5 lbs of this, and I need 10 lbs of this," and did not know that lbs means pounds. There was a person giving change saying, "How much is this worth?" Holding up a nickel. How much is this worth? And then my favorite. How much is 12 Florida ounces?
So a Florida ounce is slightly different than a Georgia ounce. They're not the same thing.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we take for granted that people just don't know anymore. And it's quite bad.
You know, one thing that people know, I remember being taught when I was my first job out of high school was working at a grocery store stocking shelves, but my next job was at a pet store. And I remember when the owner of the pet store showed me, he's like, when you give back somebody's change, if they give you if it's $5.27 and they give you back and they give you a 20, here's how you count it back to them.
Yeah.
And you start with what they gave you and you count up to 20.
Yep.
And man, that blows people's minds today.
They're lost. They have no idea how to do it.
They don't even, it's not even that they don't understand the math. They don't even know what you just did. They're like, what?
Yeah. Or how many bagels is a half dozen? I just don't, I got to look up the code. I'm not kidding. Code. True example. If I can just switch for a moment, I'd like to do a shameless plug for those of you going to Podcast Movement this coming week. I will be there on Tuesday, the 19th of August, 9:45 a.m., which I guess is kind of prime time.
Sounds pretty prime time. Because that's right after everybody gets coffeeed up and everybody's ready to go. Yeah.
Shall I read you what they've written on their Podcast Movement website about my speech here? First, the headline is, Adam Curry, the Podfather, returns to Podcast Movement. Wow.
Adam Curry returns.
I've returned. Information. Like every media/technology/cultural darling throughout history, podcasting is full of speculation. What will keep it flourishing? How can it grow without losing its unique magic? What will make it a mainstay for advertisers? Huh? Everyone's perspective and efforts across the ecosystem are worthy. That, of course, includes the perspective of the man who effectively started it all.
Did they say Podfather in there?
Let me see. One of the storied MTV VJs in the 80s and 90s. Adam Curry, in parens, along with Dave Weiner, is the, little asterisk, podcast pioneer.
Wait, they put an asterisk on it?
But no, between the word the has two asterisks, so it's emphasized. It's markdown. It's markdown language.
Markdown. It slipped through.
Having developed the concept, format, and technology in 2004, he's never stopped. Principal in the Podcast Index Collective. Oh! If I'm the principal, you, Dave Jones, are surely the hall monitor.
Safety patrol.
Safety patrol. Crossing guard.
Yes, Dave Jones. Safety patrol.
Adam champions open and independent podcasting. And no great mystery, he has a lot to say about the technology and approach that's going to keep this space on its rock star trajectory. More interactivity, better delivery protocols, easier ways for creators to make money in the context of podcasting 2.0. Wow. He joins audio luminary Rocky Thomas, Soundstack CSO, who has just as much to say about all of this for this intimate and specific discussion. Takeaways will include, oh, they already have takeaways.
Oh, you haven't even talked yet. They got to you. Okay. All right.
Current lay of the land on podcasting 2.0 and what's working for publishers now, in parens, location tags, funding tags, etc. Coming features that will truly move the needle, lit, etc. That's not a coming feature. That's already an existing feature. And finally, ways for any of us to get involved. The Podcast Standards Project, etc. And here's my favorite part. Headphone color white, channel 6.
Wait, what?
I know.
What does that mean?
I know.
What does that mean?
But I didn't know what this meant until Rocky Thomas explained it to me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
When I feel like I should have this on my phone. Rocky Thomas. Yes. I have to have that at the ready.
a little bit more intro music, and then you can do the smoke machine when she comes out the door with it.
Smoke machine, pyrotechnics.
Yeah.
So apparently, this was unbeknownst to me. In the sessions, everybody has a headphone, and I guess maybe there's multiple sessions and you put on your headphones, white colored headphones, and use channel number 6 because it's not an amplified session. It's kind of like a deaf disco. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I don't, and
Rocky said the problem is, or at least last year, she said, because this is not a new thing, is that you don't hear yourself in the headphones, which is like, wow, that's going to be difficult.
Okay, you're going to have to stop because I still do not understand what is being told to me right now.
Okay.
You're saying that everybody in the audience is going to have headphones on.
Yes, like a bunch of drones.
And you're going to be talking. Are you going to have headphones on too?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I can hear questions or people burping. Apparently. I don't know. I don't know if there's someone switches like headphone number 37, you go. I don't know.
Do the headphones have mics on them?
Presumably.
Wow. This is so weird. Why does this have to happen? I don't understand. Why is this better than just, hey, if you got a question, come to the mic. It's over there in the...
Yeah, I don't know. But that's what they're doing now so that everybody can hear. And And I guess, you know, and so maybe it's so it doesn't bleed over into other, maybe it's all in one big room and you just sit at different tables and you're talking. You can switch between channels and listen to a different session.
Okay. Daniel says the stage is in the expo hall, so it's too noisy for a PA. So they use this headphone system so the audience wears headphones so they can hear the session. Sometimes they'll have sessions literally right next to each other.
Wow.
Whew.
Wow, wow, wow.
Man.
That's pretty interesting, huh?
Look, I believe in you.
Look, he has a picture of the headphones. Looks like my first Sony headphones.
Oh, yeah. Silent sound system?
Huh.
Huh. The white head. You got the white headphones.
Yes, yes. It's a much valued color, white.
Yes, the absence of all color.
So anyway.
Good luck.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. Because that feels weird to me.
Good luck. Well, I'm very thankful that SoundStack paid for the room. That's why I return. I would never return for those guys because they did us dirty, man.
The audience can switch. Nathan said the audience can switch audio channels at will. So that means they can just listening to you and start listening to somebody
else. Literally tune out.
There's going to be a dude in the front row.
Yeah, who's going
to
be
staring at you and and listening to some other session.
Conferences are not what they used to be.
And then he's going to ask a question, and you're going to think he's talking to you, and he's actually talking to the guy two stages down. This is weird.
Bizarre. It's bizarre. But anyway, so I'm going to meet Rob Kirkpatrick from Focus on the Family. I'm going to meet him after that, okay. And then hopefully I'll get to have a coffee or something with Cridland, because he's like, I want to have a coffee with you. Of course, we should. We need to catch up. We've never really caught up properly.
The only time I've ever met him in person, it was during COVID, and so nobody was allowed to touch each other.
Yeah, and when I see James Cridland, I obviously want to touch him. Let's be fair. Let's be honest.
Everybody, he's just so touchable.
He's touchable. He's huggable.
He's just so very touchable.
Yeah. And then he and Sam Sethi didn't do a regular power today. So I miss my
crid. Really?
Miss my crid fix, man. With my crid fix. Yeah. I love how these guys are like, well, you know, if American Customs lets me in to the country.
Why would they not?
They
have contraband. Are they bringing?
No, it's this perception outside of America that we're horrible people.
Oh, because of Trump.
Yeah, Trump. Basically, because of ICE. Trump. You know. Yeah.
Look, just don't bring any fruit. As long as you don't bring fruit,
you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Oh goodness. Do we have anything else? We got a couple more minutes here before we have to thank some people. I want to make sure you got everything out today. You're walking away.
So I was looking at my sheet, which I had which had slipped onto the floor. I think that's all I had, cuz I want to talk about I've got an idea for maybe how we can try to get something rolling with Spurlock's.
Oh wait, stop right there. Do a Daniel J. Lewis tease. I have next week on the board meeting. We have an idea how we can get something rolling with Spurlock's, and leave it right there.
Let's see. Where is it? Here it is. I couldn't remember it first. SPC, Standard Podcast Consumption.
Oh yeah. Well, good, because I like that. That's something I have some use cases for.
So we're doing the show next week.
Are we?
Yeah, we are, right?
Yeah.
You'll be here. Okay.
Yeah. Is something? Am I gone? Do you know more than I do?
Have I not told you your calendar yet?
I guess not. I'm being lived, man. I'm being lived. We should have Spurlock on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, let's get Spurlock on the show.
Hold on. Let me see.
He's never doing anything. Let's get him on the show.
Does he have a job now? I can never keep track of him.
Oh, Spurlock would wilt with a real job.
Yeah, me too, by the way.
He can't, he's not, it's not, yeah, he'll never have a real job. He needs to be free to float and be taken where his mind wants to lead him.
Okay. All right. Let's thank some people for boosting during this fine board meeting. We kick it off with Martin Lindeskog. Let me make sure I read them in reverse chronological order. Actually, he sent the same one twice. So we always appreciate that. 1776 and 1701. So we thank you for that same message, though, Boostagram, from True Fans. Adam, best premises with your fire chat. I'll be doing a fire chat for sure at the Podcast Movement Conference. I asked Rocky Thomas on LinkedIn if it would be possible to listen to your conversation on a new modern podcast application. She replied, working on it. We'll let you know. I will do an episode on podcast events at my new podcast, Swing That Gig. We planned an unconference. Potluck conference is keynote conferences in Swedish in Gothenburg. Mm. Some time ago, but then the pandemic came along us some time ago, and it was not possible to arrange it. I saw an email thread that Rocky asked Rob Greenlee to bring his fancy, like $2,500 multi-microphone recording system.
Oh, really?
Do you know about this?
No.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. He was talking about it. Here, let me see. It's called the... Nomono.co.
Nomono. I've heard of that, but I didn't know it was $2,000.
Yeah, $2,500. Turn any great conversation into a podcast. It's basically a portable blob, and it has four microphones, and it's almost like you're playing a game of Hungry Hippos, but instead of smashing on the Hungry Hippos, you grab the microphone and then it records your conversation. Oh, it's kind of a cool idea. So I'm presuming that will be recorded. So hopefully. Hey, 33,333 sats from Salty Crayon, dude named Ben, coming in from the Castomatic. I'm Sir Curacaster. Howdy, Dave and Adam. Just wanted to say a huge thanks for all you've done and built with everyone for Podcasting 2.0 and the music. I think the remaining ones of us, the music podcasters, can confidently carry the banner of V4V Music when y'all move on to go full godcasting like Hello Fred. It's been full of scissors. It's full of scissors, and we're happy to keep running with them 5x5 in the pipe. I will tell you that I predict many godcaster people will be using Value for Value Music in the future. They are all ready for it. And a lot of these churches make music, and they're looking for alternative ways to distribute it and for people to send them value. So I think we're not done yet with that. We're not walking away from anything.
Walking away. I'm not sure about that. I had some notes that I had written down to talk about. We didn't get to it, but
okay.
And maybe we can talk about this next week with Spurlock. I'll jot it down. But this about the idea of having of some features you have to sort of shepherd and push, and other features kind of live and grow on their own.
Yeah.
And I think V4V has just been, or about the value tag has been one of those features that you have to push. You know, you have to get traction. You have to. It's a complicated feature.
It is.
You have to have an ombudsman for that feature to be able to guide normal people into its use. Whereas other features are just more simplistic, and they kind of will live and grow on their own. And the value tag. You know, the value tag, became more complicated when Albie made their changes.
Well, I can tell you what's going to happen, what should happen. And this will be controversial. But I already predicted it and already said it was going to happen. And stablecoin will be a part of our lives globally. There are already 400 million users. It's divisible digitally, so you can send little bits and bobs and little pieces just like we do today with Bitcoin. But if we want it to catch on big, the actual value for value part, it will have to, there will have to be a payment rail that is stablecoin. And I don't think the people who are doing it right now will feel like doing that.
Probably not.
We never had programmable money until we had programmable money. And there will be programmable money in the form of stablecoin. The entire world will be using it. That's just a fact. I mean, it's law. It's written in the books. It's a big part of the American financial strategy to keep dollar dominance. And it is not within the DNA of the V for V people. So someone will have to pick that up and run with it if they want it to work. But I'm not sure that's going to happen very quickly. But
well, I mean, it's good that True Fans and Fountain made the changes that they did to, you know, to be able to show things in, like, you know, country denominated currency instead of, you know, just in sats and that kind of thing, because that sets the stage for if they want to also support stablecoin under the hood, they can, that'll, it'll, it won't be, they won't have to do any more, you know, they won't have to change that idea.
I hope so. And I think True Fans probably sees the opportunity. It may not be so married to the Bitcoin part. Listen, I'm a Bitcoin maxi. I love Bitcoin. I don't have anything else. Don't have any, what is that stupid thing? Ripple. What is that? XRP.
XRP.
I don't have XRP. Oh my God. My hair girl. So I set her up with a wallet 2 years, not 3 years ago. I'm going to say, I'm going to tip you in Satoshis. And so she sends me a note saying, hey, so I'm getting back into this now. I'm trying to be hip with the kids. And, she has like over a million sats from my tipping.
Ooh,
and wow. She's like, this is so cool. Of course, when I was tipping her early on, it would, you know, a million sats wasn't $1,000. It's like, this is so cool. This is great. I'm also investing in an XRP. I'm like, oh, goodness. Investing in XRP. Like, now, so just keep those sats in your wallet, and then we'll talk in 5 years, and maybe you can buy a car. So...
We got some PayPals.
Yes.
We got a one-off from the boys at RSS.com, Ben and Alberto.
Yes.
$777.
Bam! Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Ah, thank you. Ah, we love you guys. Thank you so much. We had a nice call with them. Those guys, they're good guys, man.
Go podcasting. Adam, see you in Dallas. And Dave, we hope the other board meetings are as smooth as a perfect wave. Alberto and Ben and the RSS.com team.
Yes, thank you, boys and girls from RSS.com. Thank you so much for keeping Podcast Index rolling.
We got a nice one from Amy. I don't know if she wants me to use her last name. So it's $100 from Amy.
Wow,
and
hold
Amy
on.
Says,
that's a baller.
Shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Thank you, Amy. What does Amy say?
She says, please credit this to Sir Duchink and wish him a happy birthday for August 14th. Thanks from Dame Slammy.
Oh, Dame Slammy, I think it is, actually.
Slammy?
Yeah, I think so.
S-L-A-M-Y. Thank you, Dame Slammy.
Oh, awesome. Slammy. Thank you very much. Love that.
Very appreciated. That. Thank you. Got some boostergrams. Let's see. What do we got in the boostergram department?
Boostergrams.
Let me sort the old email by oldest first. Is that Fauci? That is Fauci.
That is Fauci.
Boost.
It's Fauci.
5,000 sats from Anonymous, the Podcast Index, says keep up the great work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Anonymous. Mike Dell, 1701, Star Trek Boost. Through Podcast Guru, he said, I gave up on Castomatic. I'm trying Guru. Why'd you give up?
Why'd Mike? You give up, man? It works. Yeah, what's up with that?
Let's see. Did you get August? Today's August 15th, right?
Yes, August 15th. I'm watching President Trump and President Putin both come down the ladders of their individual aircraft onto the tarmac at Alaska, moving towards each other. This is a seminal moment, ladies and gentlemen. Will they be
the summit?
Who will do the power handshake? Who will have the power move? Hold on, I can put my glasses on so I can watch on the quad screen. No one else, the whole world has stopped at this. The whole world has stopped for this moment as BBC World Service is here to witness this incredibly historic event. There he is, the president of Moscow, president of Russia. He is walking on the red carpet, and the president of the United States with his red tie that is always a little bit too long. He is walking down as well, and they're looking at each other. They are going at a nice pace. Will they intersect right in front of those beautiful, beautiful F-35 jets that are on the tarmac in front of the Alaska 2025 sign? Yes, it looks like they will.
All right, I'm waiting for that. Putin is in the purple trunks. Trump is in the green trunks. Mere Mortals podcast. That's our buddy Kyron over there in the Down Unders. Satchel Richards 1111 through you, Fountain.
All right,
Kyron. He says, I finally caught back up after traveling around Europe for a couple of months. Appreciate all the hard work and exciting new developments. Go podcasting.
Yeah, indeed. Go podcasting.
And Kyron is a world traveler.
Yes,
he is. All over the place.
He's everywhere.
Bruce the Ugly Quacking Duck, 2222, Row of Ducks through Podcast Guru. Maybe you could do a database record for our government officials and remove all the duplicated wasters. LOL, if only a little sci-fi there, 73s.
Hey, so Trump basically just stood on the red carpet and Putin came towards him. Power move. Yeah, big power move.
That's just a different version of the grab you by the shoulder when you do the handshake.
Yeah, thing. That was good. Well, you know, Putin's like, yeah, it's good, man. I'll walk to you. I'm fine.
Comic strip blogger.
Yeah, 12, the delimiter. There he is.
12,615 sass through Fountain.
Nice.
Howdy, Dave and Adam. Your president is meeting a Russian dictator in Alaska today. So I would like to recommend a YouTube channel entitled Inside Russia so that y'all, CSB said y'all.
Y'all.
So that y'all can learn the no-nonsense, no-sycophancy truth about Russia. Go to YouTube, search for Inside Russia. Its host is Constantine, who was living a couple of years in the USA. His one of two wives.
What?
And his two of six.
How many wives do you get? Russia sounds like a bargain.
his one of two wives and his two of six kids are American, so his English is decent. Sadly, no audio-only variant. Yo, CSB. CSB getting serious.
Yeah. He does not like the... Are they going to get in the same car together? That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Do you think Trump will let Putin change
the station?
He stops. Don't touch my radio.
Yeah, they're both getting in the beast. Ah, amazing. Oh boy, what times we live in, brother Dave? What times we live in?
We got some monthlies. We got Christopher Harabarek, $10. Mitch Downey, $10. Terry Keller, $5. Chris Cowan, $5. Damon Kasajak, $15. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. Paul Saltzman, $22.22. Thank you, Paul. Jeremy Gerds, $5. New Media Show, that's Todd, $30.
Thank you, Todd.
Michael Hall, $5.50. And Gene Liverman, our buddy Gene, $5.
Oh, awesome. Thank you all so much for supporting podcastindex.org. Whenever I tell people the story, they're like, really? People support that? I say, yes. Yes, they do. Surprisingly, they do.
People actually give you real American dollars?
Yes. Yes. They and Satoshis and Bitcoin. What? Really? What? Yes. Believe it or not, open source, complete open projects like this can work. And this group, this entire group, everyone hanging out at podcastindex.social, which, by the way, is open to all. If you want, just send us an email. And yep, we'll be happy to send you an invite. Of course, it is federated across the Mastodon infrastructure. So you can always follow and hit that like button and subscribe. You can follow and comment, and you know it does work across instances. But if you'd like to be a closer part to it, you're more than welcome to. Everything goes to podcastindex.org. Everything stays within the confines of what we need for dedicated machines running. It's quite a bit of infrastructure, you can imagine. And we're happy to do it. We do it as a public service. If you'd like to support us, you can boost us with the modern podcast apps. Get those at podcastapps.com. Or you can go to podcastindex.org down at the bottom. There's a big red donate button. Hit that, and it'll take you to the PayPal page for your fiat fun coupons. And we appreciate everyone who supports us either with time, talent, or treasure. It's a value for value system. All right, Brother Dave, you have a busy weekend? Are you doing anything?
It's actually my wife and I, it was our 26th wedding anniversary yesterday.
Wait, but you went into the woods for that, didn't you? You guys went into the woods?
That was for the 25th, which was actually last year, but we didn't get to do our 25th trip last year. So we did it this year.
This year it's just sex, that's it? Nothing else? Finally!
Finally. I've been waiting 26 years.
Yeah. All right, everybody, we know what Dave's doing. What will you be doing? You'll join us here next week for Podcasting 2.0.
Podcasts are cool.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting! It's too much teasing.